So what do you do when life happens? If you don't know already, you'll know after this episode of Catalytic Radio. What happens when life happens? You get catalytic. That's what you do. My name is Cheryl Hirsch Kramer. I am the host of this audio extravaganza. We've been here for a few months now, and one of my favorite guests in the whole series is with us tonight. It's Dr. Michael Irving. He was with us a few weeks ago. And the gift that we have for you for the holidays is he will be back again on the next episode of Catalytic to continue the conversation. His website is wellnessfortheheart.com. And he is here to help us enjoy the holiday season. The name of the show is A Holiday Gift of Love from Us to You. Be a winner over pain and stress through the holiday season. And as I said as a subtitle, and I mean this with all respect, Dr. Irving, how to get through the holidays without killing somebody. Because, you know, so many people look at this as a stressful time of the year. Hey, Auntie Williams told us this is the most wonderful time of the year. So we're going to find out tonight why the perception isn't that. This should be joyous. This is the holidays. We're going to do all we can to help you enjoy your holiday season. And if there's anybody who can do it, it is my guest, who is a specialist in pain management and knows how to help you enjoy your holiday season. So instead of reading the whole bio, which is useful, and we'll tell you how to get there, let's just go right into the conversation. How are you tonight, Dr. Irving?
I'm doing great. It's very good. I knew this morning that I was going to be talking with you tonight about pain management through the holiday seasons. There's hundreds of millions, like 100 million Americans suffer from chronic pain, like more than all forms of cancer and heart disease and diabetes combined. And it's really, really an amazing number. And it really inhibits people's life. And so this morning, after I shower, I bent down and threw my back out. And there have been times that I've been on a cane, and I went looking for my cane this morning, and here it is. And the really interesting thing is that chronic pain is often associated with anxiety and depression. And I write about managing chronic pain and pain reduction and managing pain. And I've been using all of what I teach to get me through my day. And when I left my doctor's office this afternoon at 4 o'clock, she says, "Doctor, heal thyself." So anybody who's suffering stress and chronic pain or pain around the holidays, I'm wearing the same shoes that you're wearing.
You know what I love? You're in pain, and you sound happy and joyous and present with us. How are you doing that? When many people
It's really fascinating. I think we're going to go into it more in the next show. But I see a distinction between pain and suffering. And there are people in pain, and they don't have suffering. And suffering is regretting the past or dreading the future. If we lose someone and we have grief and we have loss and anger and hurt, and those are not emotional sufferings. Those are emotional pains. And we have physical pain, even severe physical pain. That pain is not suffering. The suffering is regretting the past. Oh, this shouldn't have happened. Oh, life's been miserable. Or dreading the future. Things are never going to work out. How long am I going to be suffering? And there are three ways that we get out of regret and dread. In a sense, three ways we get out of suffering. One is just simply changing the words, changing the regret and dread. The other is distraction, doing something else so that it fills up our time and we don't have time to regret and dread. Or being in the present moment, meditation, or simply just recognizing what's happening around you and thinking in a positive way. So I guess today I've been using those really big time because I remember in the past when I have been in the same amount of pain that I've been in today, I have had suffering. And I've had to learn a lot to walk away from and close the door on suffering and just take life for how it is.
you know, you're a great teacher. I'm sorry that you're in pain today physically, but I have a feeling that because you're in pain in this moment, you're going to help all of us learn how to deal with our pain. So thank you for making yourself a sacrificial lamb for the better good of all.
I was thinking last week, you know, who am I to be talking about this? You know, I'm glorious and everything's fine. And, you know, the universe knocks you in the side of the head every now and then, the way that you need to be knocked in the side of the head. So it did it to me this morning.
I appreciate your transparency as well. You know, you could have just faked it and we wouldn't have known. But the fact that you're putting yourself out there and telling us the truth, I admire that. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
Okay, so it is.
It
really is.
Today, one of the ways that I manage the back pain, because I was, you know, I was looking for my cane, which I had lent to someone else, and so I've got a walking stick so I could use for the cane. And one of the ways that I use to manage pain when I have pain is I will focus on an area of the body where I am not feeling pain. In some ways, it's the same as if you're stressed. If you're stressed out and you're feeling it in your belly, you can focus on another area of the body. We tend to focus on our pain or our anxiety, and whatever we focus on expands. So I focused on my fingertips and the air around my hands, and that took me, in my high degree of focus, it took me away from the sensations on my back. That doesn't mean that I've been battling the back pain on and off over the day, but I have been trying to employ distraction and other kinds of mind-body tools. On our website, which is wellnessfortheheart.com, on the first on the blog page, the first blog, the one that I put up for our listeners today, has a list of about 30 different approaches to manage stress or to manage pain. Some of them we'll talk about today, but if anybody says, oh, that was a good one, what did they exactly say? You can go to wellnessfortheheart.com, go to the blog on the top of the page, and then the first blog post will be basically much of what we're reviewing today.
So we don't have to take notes. We can just go there and read after the fact, right?
That's right.
This is good. So for those of us who are perennial students and we feel we've got to take notes, you can just sit back and enjoy the show. How's that for fun? That takes care of a lot of the stress, doesn't it?
Yeah. I love learn-it-alls over know-it-alls. You know, there's nothing like a learn-it-all who just continues to learn and learn and learn.
Yeah, I've been that person. I know what you're talking about.
You're
let
a learn-it-all.
Me go back. Oh, yeah, I know. Pain in the butt, isn't it? But let me go back a moment in time. For people who are not used to focusing on a part of their body that is not currently in pain, and they're probably saying, what is he talking about? What advice can you give to help somebody do that?
Okay, well, the first helpful thing to do is to sit the more you practice it, the easier it kicks in, and the more quickly it kicks in. But to begin with, sit in a chair, sit in a comfortable position, and begin to focus on your breath. Every time your mind is distracted by something else, return to a focus on the breath. Anytime your pain sort of takes over your focus, return to the focus on the breath. Now, as you begin to settle into this, there's a couple of fascinating things. One is that you can focus on your fingertips. Because I practice mind-body tools, and I have for quite a few times, I did a root canal a couple of years ago without any Novocaine, without any painkillers, because when they shoot all of those needles into you, and once the numbing takes place, they stick more and more needles into you, the pain that you feel over the day is really more the pain from from all of the needles than from the actual dental work. So I can use my mind-body tools in pretty dramatic situations because I practiced a lot. So one of the things is that you sit down and breathe and you focus on practicing noticing your fingers or noticing your toes somewhere far away from where the pain is. You might feel the air. You might feel the clothing. Another thing that you might focus on quite interesting is if you focus on sounds that are outside of you. The odd thing is that sounds, rather than being distractions, sounds are the experience of the here and now. And the more that you're in the here and now, the less that you're in the dread of the future and the regret of the past. And when you start to focus on sounds around you and you start to really hear them, you'll hear sounds that are further and further away. And those sounds that are further and further away, like moving to your fingertips, takes your attention further and further away. Now, another fascinating mind control technique is that when you have an area with really sharp pain, you can focus. That sharp pain is often, or the stabbing pain, is often associated with some other feelings around it. It like might be like warmth, or it might be tingling. So my back pain right now, which is fairly sharp, has this warmth around it. Well, that warmth has a soothing quality. So while I was just talking now, a few moments ago, my back pain was kind of sharp, and I started focusing on the warmth that was there. And I started, you know, the warmth that the body is creating, or that warm sensation the body is creating, is almost the same quality of putting a heating pad on it. So I focused on that warmth, and currently, in this moment, the sharp pain is completely extinguished. And whether it's because I so focused on the other pain that sort of took my mind completely away from it or distracted, or the warmth may be the body's natural property, the numbness, the tingling, whatever it might be the body's natural activity to, in effect, alleviate the pain. So I'm not sure what the purpose or the meaning of that warmth is, but I did experience now, by focusing on that, the pain has gone. Now, I'm expecting later on today, if I get up or move around, I'm expecting that it might come back. But sometimes when I do some mind-body activities for a while, it's gone and I don't have to bother with it anymore. I just turned 65 past year, and I ran 5 marathons in 12 weeks to celebrate turning 65. That's after just a few years back walking around on a cane and being bedridden at times because of the severity of the chronic pain that I was in. So chronic pain is something that we can heal. Chronic pain is something that we can get over. In the meantime, we can use mind-body tools to manage pain. And then there are techniques, which we're going to talk about in the next, in 2 weeks on our next radio show, is the whole idea of literally eradicating chronic pain. And I'm having some extraordinary success with clients and colleagues with eradicating chronic pain, which is, you know, I'm so pleased to do. It's so nice to see somebody who is debilitated with chronic pain and have it disappear. And it's amazing what the mind can do to do that.
Let me ask you, this is on behalf of the people, and I used to be one of you, so I understand how it is to be you right now, who have to do everything right, whatever right means. But you're talking about your breathing. So people who need to do everything right are going to ask, how do you breathe? Do you do the inhale over 4, hold it for 2, exhale over 4? Do you have a pattern for breathing? How do you breathe?
Well, there are a variety of breathing techniques, and I think the thing to do is to find the one that works for you. A fascinating one that I use both with myself and sometimes use with teaching others is something called vagus nerve stimulation. There's a nerve that comes down from the brain, and it goes through the voice box and the lungs and the heart and all of the organs. It's almost like an upside-down tree with the roots and the brain and all of the branches through the organs. Well, when that nerve is stimulated, it produces oxytocin, vasopressin, a variety of painkillers or relaxants. And so to do vagus nerve breath, if you take a breath in, and anyone who's listening, or you can practice it with me now, you take a deep breath, and I'm going to breathe now. And then once you have that deep breath, you take another breath on top of that. And then you hold that, you take another breath on top of that, And then those breaths and the tightening on the chest is triggering the or stimulating the vagus nerve, letting out for like 7 seconds. And doing that three or four times, triggers neurotransmitters, which are in fact relaxed. They actually slow down the heart rate. They dilate the arteries, so they'll lower blood pressure. And they also take away pain. So the vagus nerve stimulation works for relaxation and pain relief. Now, another way to stimulate the vagus nerve is to take a breath in that takes about 7 seconds to take it in and 7 seconds to take it out. So it's a different kind of breath. It's just a full breath. All the way in and then all the way out. And then again, doing that 4 or 5 times. The interesting thing about the vagus nerve stimulation is very often it's helpful to do the vagus nerve stimulating breath, either the bringing it in and holding it, bringing it in and holding it, bringing it in and holding it, and then letting it out, and then take 3 or 4 natural breaths in between. Or if you do the deep breaths that 7 seconds in and 7 to 10 seconds out, can do 3 or 4 natural breaths in between. The just rhythmic breath. Very often when we have stress or when we have pain, it's accompanied by something we call the monkey mind. And the monkey mind is a mind that has lots of thoughts or jumps all over the place, thinks all kinds of things. And it's almost an expression of anxiety. It frequently causes us more worry. And with the monkey mind, what you do with the breathing is you simply notice the monkey mind, you notice the thoughts that you have, you accept them without judgment. You don't criticize yourself for having them. You might even say something, oh, that's an interesting thought. And then you just return to being aware of your breath. And that can be deep breathing or just a natural breath. I like to have people breathe in through the nose and then breathe out through slightly parted lips. Breathe in through the nose and breathe out through slightly parted lips. So the breath in many cultures, whether it's Eastern cultures or whether it's the Cherokee or the Hopi approaches to mind-body approaches to healing, the breath is universally used. It is recognized for its power to calm us and to relax us. The same way that it's quite fascinating, the same way that those deep breaths, the same way that we, you know, when you focus on the monkey mind and just notice, I'm not focused on it, you notice the monkey mind and then focus on the breath, the same thing works with your pain. When you have pain, if you have an awareness of the pain and just say, oh, that's a curious pain, that's a curious sensation, and then return to the focus on the breath. Those things take us into the present moment, which take us out of the regret and dread of the past, out of the suffering. They also change where our focus, where our attention is, kind of distraction, but they also create a deep sense of meaning, a deep sense of purpose through being aware of the present moment. You asked about some of the struggles with how do we get over pain, how do we get through pain. And I mentioned that pain is related to, the suffering part of pain is related to regret and dread. There's another phenomenon, which is resiliency. And resiliency helps us give another meaning to our pain. Very often, the regret and the dread is that this pain has made my life miserable and always will, and it just ruined all of these kinds of things. Napoleon Hill, actually, Buddha said something, and it was nearly repeated in a different words, but the same meaning by Napoleon Hill. And Napoleon Hill stated that every adversity has an equal or greater benefit. Every adversity has an equal or greater benefit. And what this means is that whether you have a high degree of anxiety or you have a high degree of depression or a high degree of pain, if you believe that you're going to get through it, you begin to kick into the resiliency effect. If you see that and look for that there's some kind of lesson, there's some kind of opportunity. In some ways, every adversity, as Napoleon Hill kind of alluded to, every adversity is a gift. I'd never wish an adversity on somebody, but the way that you're going to get through an adversity is rather than seeing it as something miserable that robbed your life, to look for what have you learned from this adversity? What have you learned from your pain? You know, maybe you've learned stress reduction because you've had pain. Maybe you've had to become more skilled at your stress reduction because you've had pain. I certainly had to become more skilled at pain reduction and pain management because I had severe pain. And then the third component of resiliency is positive thinking. Just looking at a glass being half full, just looking at things that are good in your life. So the resiliency, which really gives, forces us or opens us to seeing pain or anxiety or whatever it is, whatever hardship, to see it in a deeper light, to give it, in a sense, meaning and purpose, and that is believing you're going to get through it, seeing that there's a lesson or an opportunity, a door closes and a window opens, and move forward with positive thinking. I think that whole idea of suffering being regret and dread, and the importance of having resiliency, and then just knowing that your body is amazing at creating pharmaceuticals, at creating drugs. I mean, the oxytocin of deep breathing is more powerful a drug than morphine or other opiates. And not only that, but the oxytocin, it makes us forget our pain afterwards too. So some way we're blessed with an amazing pharmacy that we walk around with every day. And the whole question is, do we kick it on or not? And the body does naturally kick it on. But we can use mind-body tools so that we can kick it on, not just coincidentally, but we can kick it on with a conscious competence rather than an unconscious competence.
Yeah, this is brilliant information. And again, I'd like to remind our listeners, if you want the notes from this, you want to go to wellnessfortheheart.com/blog. Or just hit the blog button, and you can read. This is great stuff. I wish I would have had this years ago when I was in work. And go ahead.
And you know what, Cheryl? When they go to wellnessfortheheart.com, whether they're listening to us through, I'm taking the blog away. I'm just going to it. There is an icon for a free gift for our listeners. So you just scroll down the page a little tiny bit, and it says, BBS radio listeners, click here for your radio bonus, or click here for the pain management holiday suggestions. That'll take you to the blog. But there's the bonus is an ebook and then an audio session for stress reduction. And that's my gift to everybody. Actually,
that's
you and I talked about it.
We did.
You and I
we
talked
did.
About it. Before. Want to talk over each other?
No, sorry to do that. I'm glad that you've offered that to everybody. I think it's great after you've listened to a broadcast. I understand that if you don't put something into use within a few minutes afterwards, you're not going to. So here you're giving us a way to put this information into immediate use, and I thank you for doing that for all of us.
Yeah. Super learning has really fascinating. There's a 10, 24, 7. 10 is that whatever you do when you're trying to learn, you do it at a level 10. So you have lots of excitement, lots of enthusiasm. Your learning level increases significantly. You review it 24 hours later. That means tomorrow morning you review, look at our blog, review, and then 7 days later, review again. So one of the ingredients for super learning is play at a level of 10, review in 24 hours, and then review again in 7 days. So that's the 10-24-7 rule.
Brilliant. And thank you. Thank you for giving that to us as well. So again, you're getting lots of education here with Dr. Michael Irving, talking about how to get through the holiday season, be a winner over pain and stress through the holiday season. And these are great ideas so far. I want to take the conversation somewhere that's related. So you have wonderful suggestions, and I'm doing this on behalf of the people who have a really strong judge inside of themselves. You know what I'm talking about. You know, they've been trained to judge. They've seen it from their families. They've become very judgmental of themselves. They may not know it, but they have been. So let's say that they try all the pain management suggestions that you're offering to us right now, and for whatever reason, they're not working, and they have to take medication. And they judge themselves for taking medication. What would you say to those people?
I'd say a couple of things. If your meds work, use them. and then if you want to begin to learn and practice mind-body tools, something like progressive relaxation, and we have a progressive relaxation series on our website, and also progressive relaxation ebook is, I think, the free gift that's coming with this radio show. Progressive relaxation, there's some research that has been done where people have done progressive relaxation for 3 months. People who had severe depression or severe anxiety, and they broke them into control groups. One group took medication, anti-anxiety or anti-depression, depending on what the issue was. Another group didn't do anything, and then another group did progressive relaxation for 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week. In 3 months' time, the people that did progressive relaxation had as much benefit as the people that took medication.
Wow.
So the medication can have some side effects, and frequently if you take medication for depression or anxiety, then the medication is what's controlling it, and you stop the medication, and it's you're back to dealing with the underlying emotional issues, and you're back to dealing with your body is not yet tuned to making its own medication. Through progressive relaxation, your brain is stimulating all kinds of natural biological pharmaceuticals, and you're learning stress reduction skills. When you do progressive relaxation daily, then in between your progressive relaxation exercises, you're continuing to get the relaxation benefit, the pain management benefit, and your body's learning, oh, this is how I get rid of stress. So on an other than conscious level, anything that you practice, your other than conscious mind will use it to help you manage through the day. So by all means, if you've got medications, don't just give them up. Work with someone. If you want to wean yourself off of them, work with someone who can help you do that. And also just recognize that mind-body tools are a form of natural pharmaceuticals.
This is useful. This is very useful. Can I also throw out a caution for people who use antidepressants or other medications on a long-term basis? Something that happened to me, I don't know how well understood this is, and we haven't talked about this, Dr. Irving, but I'm sure you can offer some comments. I was on antidepressant medication when I was in my 30s for a number of years, and I took myself off of it. I was told I wouldn't be able to, but I took myself off of it. And later in life, I developed a condition called histamine intolerance because the medication overstimulated my histamine receptors. So that means I'm going to be really careful with what I eat, how much stress I experience, what kind of additives, preservatives, things like that, what kind of chemicals I'm around, what I used to clean my house. And if I had not been on that medication, my life wouldn't be the way it is right now. I'm not complaining. It's fine. You know, I've learned to live with it. Mm-hmm. But if I had known what you're teaching right now, I could have avoided a lot of this.
Mm-hmm. You know, if there's a really, really bad deep depression or somebody's really uncontrollably living with anxiety, you see counseling, you can learn some mind-body tools, but sometimes it helps to use some medication for a short period of time to break the vicious cycle that you're in. But in the process of breaking the vicious cycle, then you have to deal with the underlying issues, which can be everything from emotional issues, psychological history, to whether you're actually using stress reduction. People who are waiting to get into therapy and start a regular fitness or running program will find enough of their anxiety reduces that they feel like they're getting along in life and don't need the counseling. Now, counseling deals with those underlying deep sort of emotional trials and tribulations that we've had in life. Also, counseling simply teaches us how to manage our stress. And managing stress can be everything from the way that you treat yourself and the way that you love yourself and the way that you interact with the people around you and the meaning you have in life, as well as the kinds of exercises that you do. I always suggest to people that I'm working with that they have a list of daily, weekly activities that they need just to have well-being. What do they need to do to reduce stress? What do they need to do in a crisis? What for them works to have boundaries? And then what do you do to have pleasure? I have this really fascinating perspective on anxiety. When we get rid of anxiety, we have nothing. If you get rid of anxiety, you don't have anything unless you create pleasure. And an interesting analogy that I make for that is that most of us would find being on the range in prison to be a fairly anxious place. It's like most of us can't think of any kind of anxiety for our personal life that would be any worse than being on range in prison. But how do they punish? How do they punish people in prison? They put them in solitary confinement. They make nothing happen. And if you make that analogy to stress and anxiety, if you take away stress and if you don't put pleasure in, if you don't put anything in, then you have sent yourself to solitary confinement. And most of us would rather leave solitary confinement and go out to the stressful range than spend another week in solitary confinement. So what I suggest is that as important as reducing the stress, you have to raise the pleasure. So if you make a coping strategy list for what do I do to release stress, what do I do to reduce stress, it makes sense to also have a list that's beside it. What do I do to have pleasure? What do I do to have enjoyment? Because the thing that we hate worse than stress is boredom, is nothingness. And so it's really interesting to look at. I mean, we're moving through the holidays and there's all kinds of things that we can do to reduce stress. And as importantly as reducing stress is bringing pleasure in. And it's fascinating in the holidays. When we were little, when we were four, we were talking before the radio show, when we were 4 or 5 years old, the holidays was really a cool time. It's really exciting. And then we get big and find there's stresses and conflicts and all of that. But the reality is that the potential for enjoyment in pain reduction, stress reduction, and enjoyment can come from caring for others. People who volunteer are healthier. People who volunteer have less time off of work. They're sick less. People who volunteer live longer. And it's that caring for others. It's fascinating. The neurotransmitters that I was talking about that are triggered by the vagus nerve stimulation, they're triggered also by loving kindness, doing caring acts for others. Even the thought of doing a caring act for another person will trigger neurochemicals, hormones and proteins, neurotransmitters that make us feel good and that relax us and that makes us feel healthy. So the Christmas time is in the holidays, whatever one's religious practice is, the holidays are a great time to do acts of kindness for other people, whether it's smiling or it's so much easier to say happy holidays or happy New Year's or whatever. You've got a reason to share and to smile and to say happy to someone, and it's great to take advantage of that. When I was really, really little, one of the most powerful experiences for me was looking at light, you know, just neon lights. Yeah. I can remember when I was really, really little, just the color of these lights, you know, and it's probably the first time I ever saw them. And those lights are still there, and they're still just as beautiful if I take time to look at them. And it's the same for all of us. There are things to be absorbed in that are feel-good kinds of things, and that's part of getting through the holidays and getting rid of stress. Is in fact, if you took away all of the stress and you didn't do anything to feel good, your mind probably wants to go back to stress so that you're not bored.
Can you address for a few moments, we're going to talk about this, the connection between love, because it's the theme of the show, it's the catalytic power of love, and what you're teaching. How do they work together?
Okay. It's sort of like I was just speaking about loving kindness, that acts of kindness, being loved by others helps reduce our stress if we take it in. Loving others reduces our stress and reduces our pain if we do it and if we feel the intention to be loving, if we feel the intention to practice kindness. You know, the fascinating thing is that one of the most difficult things about having ongoing pain about having anxiety and depression is the sense of loss of meaning, the sense of loss of purpose, the sense of hopelessness. I think the despair and hopelessness are really down at the deep level of the darkness of chronic pain or anxiety or depression. And an antidote for hopelessness, an antidote for despair, an antidote for loss of meaning is love. It's simply love. And whether it's loving an animal, you have that experience that loving your pets has brought great reward in your life. And it can be loving a pet, it can be loving a community, loving a particular group that you want to care for or participate with, and people that are close to you. There is that our hearts entrain, meaning the rhythm of our heart, not the heartbeat, but the rhythm, the frequency of the heart entrains with other people's hearts who are feeling good. If you have three people who are practicing loving kindness, if you have three people in a room who are practicing prayer, and one person in the room, the people who are practicing prayer, there's a very smooth rhythm to their heart's frequency. And somebody who's really agitated, somebody who's really disturbed, if you look at the frequency of the heart, it's really quite erratic. It's jumping up and down, and it's short little strokes and long strokes. It's really erratic. And if the person with an erratic heart frequency is in a group of people with a warm, caring, loving, smooth heart frequency, the person who's got the erratic, who's got the disturbed frequency, will actually calm and smooth out. It's certainly one of the practices that I do is to feel my heart rhythm, to feel my balance, and to share that balance, even if I don't say it, to share that balance with people around me when I experience them as being unsettled or disturbed. And when you speak of heart, when you speak of love, to me, heart disease, which has become an epidemic in our society today, is related to a dis-ease of heart. And a dis-ease of heart leads to heart disease. And what is a disease of heart? Well, yeah, you know, because I do a lot of reading on heart disease, I frequently run about by journal articles, by medical people or scientists, and it's not uncommon for me to read the introduction to a journal article, the sole function of the heart is to pump blood. What does that say to all the poets and writers and philosophers and musicians and dancers of all of history who've spoken of the heart? who've lived from their heart. The heart is the essence. You know, in many cultures, the heart is the seat of the self. The heart is the soul. If you're going to identify yourself, you never pat yourself on the head and say, "I'm Cheryl." You pat yourself on the chest, right where your heart is, and say, "I'm Cheryl. It's nice to meet you." We identify with the heart, and the heart is, and I think that's one of the things I really love about your radio show, is that it is based in the heart, and that it's one of the epidemic of heart disease, I believe, is an epidemic of heart dis-ease. And when we look at I sometimes refer to a meal, and what's a heart healthy meal? And a heart healthy meal at Christmas time. What's a heart healthy meal at Christmas time? Was it cooked with love? Is it beautiful? Does it have an aroma? Is it shared with other people? You know, sharing with other people is what the heart is. Do we pray? Do we give thankfulness for it? Prayer and giving thankfulness and gratitude is from the heart. Is it colorful? Is it bright? Is it vibrant? In effect, is it artistic? And that's of the heart. So we need the message that comes out in your show every week about the need for love, the need to reconnect with love, the need to put love in our life. And love reduces stress, and love reduces pain, and love reduces heart dis-ease and puts us in balance with living from the heart. So is it, in effect, living for the heart?
Love is not an option these days. It's a required food group for all of us, truly. And if you're not having enough love in your life, there's a lot of it out there. It's very easy to find. You just have to put yourself out there and be a loving person, and a lot of it comes back to you with just as easily as that.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah. So let's talk more about gratitude. You just touched on that briefly. How can we find more gratitude in our life, even when we think things are difficult?
Yeah.
How can we find gratitude for our life?
It's really fascinating. Gratitude is so easy to stimulate, to trigger. And what you do is, if you write 5 things that you're grateful for on a list every day, and you do this for a few weeks, and what you do is to feel gratitude, it can be a very simple thing, like the color of an orange, or the snap that you have when you taste the orange, or it can be the home that you just got, or it can be a friend that called you. It can be really tiny and small, or it can be really big. But there's something about gratitude, and when you write a gratitude list, it kind of sticks around for a while. You start thinking about what you're grateful for. You first start with a list, and then you get into a habit. One of the fascinating things that I've experienced, and it's become something that I've taken up as a habit, when I write gratitude, when I make gratitude lists, or when I sometimes I don't even make a gratitude list, I just think a gratitude list. I think of things. Is I share that with someone else, and the people that I share it with, it often really touches them, and I enjoy that that deep moment. So, I'll go into the office, and I'll say to the receptionist, I was just thinking how much I was riding my bicycle to work, and I was just on the way here. I was just thinking about how much I enjoy. You know, really, I've got a lot of gratitude for the way that you answer the phone, the way that you say, "Hello, darling," and I just love to come in the office and listen to you pick up the phone. And I don't know who you're talking to, but I like the way, the tone of your voice. I like what you do, and that gives me a warmth to listen to it. And as I was riding my bike here, I was thinking about that. So it's not only that we have gratitude and that it warms us, but when we share gratitude, it creates a deeper meaning in our relationship with others, and it improves the life of someone else. There are some people that it's what they've always done. You know, I was talking about gratitude one day with my wife, and about gratitude with Neil, and she says, you know, she says, my whole life, she says, I never sit down to a single meal where I don't think a gratitude. I don't think about who grew this food, who might have shipped it, who might have cooked it, that there's some form of gratitude. It's just part of her nature. And so it's something that we can bring into our life. And the reality is that gratitude, like so many of the mind-body tools, and gratitude is a mind-body tool, something you do with your mind, and it affects your body. Gratitude lowers stress, and gratitude creates, it lowers pain, lowers the threshold of pain. There are mindfulness meditation and loving-kindness meditation. Loving-kindness meditation is very powerful for creating a sense of connection and a sense of gratitude, both gratitude towards oneself as well as others. Other things it's fascinating, but humor is something that reduces stress and reduces pain. You know, pain isn't chronic pain isn't a laughing matter, but sometimes laughter is a whole lot better than crying, and laughter actually, like so many things we're discovering, is that laughter creates chemicals in the brain that help us relax and help us reduce pain. And, you know, similar to these things are simply stopping and noticing what's going through our life. You know, that when you when you see your surrounding, you're mindful. On the other hand, when you're disturbed and upset, sometimes it can be helpful over the holidays and something's bothering you, simply to take a deep breath, to count down, and just take a moment, stop and think before you take and make some judgments, before you say things and escalate it outside of yourself or even escalate it inside of yourself. One of the ways to stop escalating the stress, escalating the pain inside of yourself, and it's fascinating once you practice it, is one of the things I practiced is seeing a stop sign, a great, great, great big stop sign. I learned that from a guy named Patrick Porter, who does CVR sessions, creative visualization and relaxation. And when I started using a stop sign and it worked, sometimes my wife would say to me, look at a stop sign. You know, you'd see the stress is building up. And so that stop sign is another great technique. And then there are rituals that calm us, and there are rituals that connect us with others. And it's really fascinating. There are lots of rituals at Christmas time, and there's lots of rituals at holiday time and New Year's that we have previously had positive connections to, and to reconnect with the power of those rituals, or to put in place a ritual that we are going to make a tradition. So there are traditional rituals that are, in a sense, anchors or triggers for feeling good, and there's the possibility of creating a new ritual that will eventually become a tradition.
That's lovely, that we can continue to create our traditions. They don't have to stay the same. We continue to make them dynamic.
Yeah, and the traditions, you know, a thing that helps with stress reduction, a thing that makes the holiday season better is thinking about our traditions and also just sharing memories with others, and whether that's getting out photographs or videos or just reflecting on a topic and sharing it with someone, or sharing a ritual with someone or tradition with someone, because when we share a tradition or a ritual, when we share photos, we begin to share memories. And if we focus on sharing positive memories, it makes us feel positive. And when we feel positive, it lowers our pain, it lowers our stress. It's really important to get away from the negative kind of sharing that people can get into. And if somebody is just on a negative rant, you know, get out of there or change the subject. Look for people who you share positive memory and positive thinking with. When it's somebody who is bothering you or disturbing you, you can step back on it, or you can, in effect, disagree to disagree. And you can say, you know, that's a way that you look at it, and that's okay. And you know, in effect, some way or another, saying, I'm not going to judge you for it, and also to begin to transform the conversation into positive things. And there are some people that, you know, we have stress or conflicts with that we, you know, because of getting families together or whatever, we're going to get together, and we need to manage those to manage the stress. One of the things is knowing beforehand, and sometimes even planning it out, how long am I going to spend with, you know, Uncle Gordy or somebody who gives you a lot of stress? You know, what am I going to do, to have a plan beforehand for how long you're going to spend with different people when there are people that you can only manage being around sometime so long. Don't let yourself get overwhelmed and then try to deal with the overwhelm. Deal with it beforehand. And I think that's true in many aspects of the holiday season, whether it's shopping or whether it's cleaning or whether it's going places. Know what your threshold is and know before you do it how long you're going to spend. When I run a marathon, there's a saying that training for a marathon is 90% physical and 10% mental, and the marathon day is 90% mental and 10% physical. And, you know, running in a day, running 42 kilometers, has got a lot of pain to it. It's got a lot of stress to it. There's a lot of mental management. When I'm going through the starting gate, I know exactly what my pace is going to be for the entire day. I keep my pace up in the beginning. My pace at the start of the race is the same pace that I had going through the crossing the finish line, which means that I have thought about and I've practiced and I know what my body can handle. Because if I do too much in the beginning and if I go too high of a threshold, I won't make it to the end. And the same thing goes for the holiday season. If you're doing too much in early December, if you're doing too much as you're moving into Christmas Day, come the middle of the holidays, come the end of the holidays, you'll be barking at everybody. You'll be wishing you weren't seeing people. And really, pacing yourself can make all the difference in the world. And pacing yourself is some ways you don't pace yourself after you know, if I take off running, and I didn't in my early marathon, I learned that, you know, I had the respect where, I had to know what my body tolerances were, and then I had to respect them. And you have to know what your energy tolerances are, what your mental tolerances are, what your mental emotional tolerances are, and respect them. Respect who you are, and don't try to be someone you aren't. And I think there's really important aspects of getting through managing the holidays. The holidays is a great time, lots of good stuff. The holidays are absolutely totally miserable and rotten, and, you know, can't wait for it to be over. There's so many people just refer to just hating the holidays. But, geez, there are so many nice things and great things that are happening to enjoy. And I think that if you're not enjoying it, then take a look at what you can do to enjoy it, because it can be a real rich time.
This is a great place to end, and I want to thank you so much for sharing all you've shared with us over the past hour. This feels like a college class in how to handle stress during the holidays. Dr. Irving's website, again, is wellnessfortheheart.com, and if you go there, you can download his free gifts, and you can read his notes for this broadcast. My website is transformingthroughlove.com. I am a love of life catalyst, and if you want to work with me, you can read about my work as well. But he'll be back in 2 weeks. We'll be continuing the conversation in 2 weeks. So between now and then, have a blessed holiday season, and we'll be back just before the new year to get you started off on the right track for 2016. This is your host, Cheryl Hirsch-Kramer, thanking you so much for being with us tonight, and many blessings.